I recently bought a book at my local rally house, which would not be considered a sports book at all. The book was called Secret Kansas City, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, and it was written by a local author named Ann Knigendorf. She found some areas between Kansas and Missouri that really defied explanation. And she wrote some short stories about them. I found some very interesting information that I wanted to share with you. This wasn't the Halloween show that I planned on, but this was information that I thought was kind of nice, and I'm still going to call this particular episode of the New Directions podcast Kansas City, Believe It or Not. Some things that I had never known existed, perhaps you didn't know either. We will go explore tonight in the world of the secret Kansas City here on the New Directions podcast, and we'll get going on the other side of this break. There are a lot of donut shops around, but there's one particular one that is local and really knows how to make them fresh every day. This is Terry Runyon from the podcast, here to share with you about Ray's Donuts. They make their donuts fresh every day. The coffee is absolutely fantastic, and instead of getting sugar from a packet, you get it from a sugar machine. You can wind in your own. Put as much sugar as little as possible. It's up to you, and you can make it the way you like it. They do a very big business. I deliver for them on DoorDash quite often, and I enjoy the product that they sell to everybody. It's a very good donut, and I very highly recommend it. Next time you're on Vivian Road, please stop by Ray's Donuts, and you will be very glad that you did. In Mission, Kansas, at the corner of Martway and Maple, there is an anchor set up. The anchor symbolizes a very interestingly named park, Pearl Harbor Memorial Park, which was dedicated on VJ Day, August 15th, 2004, according to what I'm reading here. Excuse me. There's a little story behind this. What's next? The fossil of an anchor? Tool around Mission, Kansas long enough, and you'll encounter a 3-ton Danforth anchor. Any good Midwesterner who's ever looked at the ground while she walks can tell you the region is full of sea life fossils. You've got your standard issue impressions of guys like Diloquinus, Acanthosaurus, easy for you to say, and Meganarpolis. But also creatures more people have heard of, such as clams, coral, and here and there a shark. But even though the Western Interior Seaway covered the Midwest, Kansas was toward the middle, as it tends to be. No one really expects to run across an actual anchor. Prior to 2004, the anchor was in the possession of the U.S. Navy in Williamsburg, Virginia. It appeared one day in this sleepy, well-kept suburban neighborhood as if it had dropped from the sky, unlike the marine fossils everyone is so accustomed to. Well, it didn't really fall from the sky. The Navy was nice enough to donate it for the August 15th, 2004 dedication ceremony of Mission's Pearl Harbor Survivors Memorial Park on the 63rd anniversary of VJ Day, commemorating victory over Japan in World War II. The memorial was created at the behest of the local chapter of the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association, and it also includes a bench with chapter members' names, all of whom are now deceased, and an encased piece of the USS Arizona's aft deckhouse superstructure. It's an anchor in a neighborhood, the corner of Martway and Maple Street in Mission. It's free to get there. The anchor is near Kansas City's best spot for buffalo wings, the Peanut. Here's a little more Halloween-related story. Graves to consider while you dine. Would you like a sprinkle of mortality on your deli meat? After the Mr. Good Sense employee in Mission, Kansas splashes oil and vinegar on your lunch meat and adds a dash of salt and pepper, sit at the table closest to the intersection and puzzle over the tiny cemetery just outside the window. It's called Cross Cemetery. Cross Cemetery. Washington and Nancy Cross are buried there. Washington died in 1872 at the exact age of 62 years, 11 months, and 5 days. Nancy died in 1886 at 76 years, 11 months, and 19 days. Online sources disagree about the spelling of the last name. Some argue that the first letter is a G. Gross, indeed. Their little plot is nice enough, sandwiched, if you will, between the two busy streets on a patch of grass and backed by a wrought iron fence. A marker dedicates the plots to the pioneers of this community, and they were the pioneers. Kansas joined the Union in 1861. These two were most likely newly settled in the area where the road to California branched off from the Santa Fe Trail and headed west. Their fellow pioneers might be buried in the Mr. Good Sense parking lot and under the street. Only the crosses' headstones remain. According to Craig Creese, of the Kansas City Area Historic Trails Association, the 1902 Johnson County Atlas shows that the Cross family owned a great deal of land around what became the intersection. It is said 6250 Johnson Drive in Mission. It's a tiny cemetery awfully close to the seating area of a sandwich place. Your cost is just the cost of your lunch if you go inside. And the pro tip, play it cool so you don't worry the other customers. Just a second here. Let's go back to World War II for this one. Think twice before showing off. You've heard of old ladies' purses being stolen, but their special order aluminum signs? That's just what happened to Miriam's Myra Jenks in 2015. But it wasn't exactly any old special order aluminum sign. No, it was one that she'd wanted for decades. One that she'd written and published a book to raise money for. Her special sign commemorated a plane crash that terrified residents of Marion, Kansas during World War II. During the war, it's pretty safe to say that a good number of the bombers that crashed did so over enemy territory. However, Jenks told the Shawnee Mission Post that in July 1944, when she was 21 years old, someone ran into her workplace to tell her that a B-24 Liberator bomber had crashed near her house, destroying 5 homes. As Jenks tells it, the pilot, Kenny Keach, was performing his last test run before shipping off. His instructor in an airfield in Nebraska told him he could fly anywhere he wanted. He chose his hometown. He and his crew circled Merriam Tower, lower, waving at the frightened and concerned citizenry below. Witnesses reported seeing the crew's laughing faces through the windows. However, Keith had flown too low for correction. On board, 3 men died and 3 others suffered critical injuries, along with 3 people on the ground. So Jenks wanted a commemorative plaque. In her 90s, she raised $1,000 to finally buy the sign. The city installed it in 2014, but less than a year later, someone ran off with it. Ultimately, the city replaced the sign. It was a plane crash memorial. I want to get to something that is Halloween related here. Just a second. I'm going to try to get get one. I will advertise for this book at the next break. Okay, how about this one? This ain't your Kennedy curse. Does a president living under a curse need extra security? On a quiet, dead-end street in the Argentine neighborhood of Kansas City, Kansas, is a plaque. It's easy to miss and only tells part of a strange story. The marker is for Whitefeather Spring, the burial site of a man named Tenskwatawa, you pronounce it, also known as the Prophet. You may have heard of his older brother, Chief Tecumseh. Tecumseh was a Shawnee intertribal leader working with the British against the United States in the War of 1812. He and future President William Henry Harrison went head-to-head at the Battle of the Thames. The battle did not end well for Tecumseh. His brother, Tenskwatawa, was so angry to lose his brother that he put a curse on Harrison, according to the Wyandotte County Museum. Tenskwatawa did not live to see the curse work. It seems to have gone into effect in the years following his death. Tenskwatawa died in 1836, and President Harrison died in 1841, after only 31 days in office. Curses are hard to interpret, but curiously, every president elected in a year ending in zero from Harrison on didn't live long. It wasn't until President Ronald Reagan survived an assassination attempt that the curse was finally broken. To wit, William Harrison was elected in 1840, died in 1841. Abraham Lincoln was elected in 1860 and died in 1865. James A. Garfield was elected in 1880 and died in 1881. William McKinley was elected in both 1896 and 1900 and died in 1901. Warren G. Harding was elected in 1920 and died in 1923. FDR Franklin Roosevelt was elected in several years, but 1940 was one of them, and he died in 1945. John F. Kennedy was elected in 1960 and died in 1963. The approximate burial place of Tenskwatawa's is on Ruby Avenue in KCK. We will have more stories, believe it or not, on the other side of this break.
Talk as a fool.
Before I had heard of Casper the Friendly Ghost, I thought ghosts were mean and scary and all points in between. But apparently there's also a ghost that you could hope to hang with. Which brings us to this story about an inn at 425, located at 425 Gladstone Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri. And the rooms, by the way, start at $165 a night. A ghost is really only a problem for people who are afraid of ghosts. So, before Stephen Zweifler's frightened friend flies in from California for a visit, Zweifler sits his ghost down for a talk. He tells her to behave and not bother the guest. Zweifler and partner Carl Marcus own and live at the inn at 425 off of Independence Avenue, and have a good rapport with ghost woman and former owner Emmeline Twice, I think. Might be Twist, but anyway. Zweifler doesn't hesitate to put her in her place. But the cost for that is that she comes up to our bedroom and wakes me up. She has that kind of sense of humor. She whispers in my ears, Zweifler says. Twist was one of the first, if not the first, female bank presidents in the area. She was the president of the Ladies Mutual Loan and Investment Association of Kansas City, Missouri, died in 1906 and was buried at the Elmwood Cemetery. But why tromp through a graveyard to meet this ambitious and brilliant woman? Zweifler isn't the only person Twist talks to. At least twice now, guests have inquired over breakfast. Who was in our room last night? The inn was just a regular Queen Anne-style house back in 1888, when the Twist family lived there. Independence Avenue had some of the grandest houses and residents in Kansas City for many years. Looking to see another one. Not quite that. I don't think I want to do that. I'm looking to try to find another Halloween-related story for you. Go back to the instruction. Go back to the table of contents. Jealous rage bursts. University bill. Oh, well, let's go here. Jealous rage bursts. University building. The building is located here in Kansas City, Missouri. Separating historical fact from lore is harder in some cases than others. But the way the University of Missouri, Kansas City acquired its very first building is the stuff of legends. The building that is now Schofield Hall used to be the Dickey Mansion, home of Walter S. Dickey. And when it comes to Dickey, the lore is pretty loud. The story goes that Dickey, who made his fortune in the clay sewer pipe business, and William Rockhill Nelson, the wealthy owner of the Kansas City Star, were bitter rivals. Word on the street is that Dickey so disliked Nelson, he would do anything he could to gall him, including purchasing a 10-acre plot in view of Nelson's front porch, so that after the house was built, Nelson would have to look at Dickey's mansion first thing every morning. Historian Chris Wolfe has done a lot of digging to find the truth among the tall tales. He says the men's dislike of each other turned to full-blown hatred in the summer of 1912. After Dickey finished building his mansion. Their disagreement stemmed from the presidential election that year, a race between Republican candidate William Howard Taft and Democrat Woodrow Wilson. Both Nelson and Dickey were Republicans, but Nelson's buddy Theodore Roosevelt came out of retirement and ran as a third-party candidate, splitting the Republican vote and allowing Wilson to win the election. Dickey had voted for Taft. Nelson died in 1915, leaving a fortune to establish the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. Around that time, Dickey really, really wanted to get into politics. Why? But couldn't get elected. Especially after a series of articles, and the Star insisted that a vote for Dickey was no better than a vote for mob boss Tom Pendergast. Deciding his failure was the fault of his old enemy's newspaper, Dickey sunk his whole fortune into bankrupting the Star. He bought two rival papers, the Post and the Journal, to put the Star out of business. In 1930, William Volcker and the Kansas City Chamber of Commerce purchased a bunch of nearby land for a university. 3 years later, with Dickie dead and his estate deep in debt, Volker asked the heirs to donate the mansion to the new school. He'd take over the expensive mortgage. And that's how the university got Dickie's house. One story also says that Walter Dickie spied on Nelson through a telescope and caught Nelson looking right back at him through his own. Story about rocks. Okay, here we go. A mural, that must have a magnetic pull. Under the heading, how can two people in Kansas City have that name? And it is long. Painter Luis Quintanilla was a Spanish folk hero. As a very young man in the 1930s, the Spanish government imprisoned him for being a revolutionary. But Quintanilla's long stint in jail worked out for Kansas City mythology because he met a man there named Julian Zugazagolitia. Remember that name if you don't already know it. I still don't. But anyway, dictator Francisco Franco wanted Quintanilla dead after his release from prison. So Quintanilla moved to the United States as part of a program for refugee artists. He did a little of this, a little of that, and painted some publicity pieces for prominent movies. While in Hollywood, he met painter Thomas Hart Benton. Benton was close friends with University of Missouri-Kansas City President Clarence Decker and used that connection to hook up Quintanilla with work as an art teacher and muralist in Kansas City. One of his first jobs was to paint 6 murals on the second floor of Hague, pronounced like the Hague, Hall, with the theme Don Quixote in the Modern World. Quintanilla dedicated a whole corner of the painting to fascism, even including a tiny picture of General Franco. By then, his old buddy from jail, Julian Zugazagoitia, had been executed by the dictator, so the artist dedicated the murals to Julian. In a bizarre twist, decades later, Zugazagoitia's grandson, also named Julian, became the director of the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, just across the street from the university. Campus historian Chris Wolf reports that when the younger Zugazagoitia visited the murals of Hag Hall, he was quite overcome to see his own name and a dedication there on the wall. Luis Quintanilla had lots of famous friends. Ernest Hemingway even lobbied for his early release from prison, but couldn't swing it. I'm going to try to find one more here. An English cow with a past. But what kind of a name is anxiety? This will close out the segment. For with his name alone, this cow should be famous. But Anxiety the Fourth, 9904, is also famous for his role as forefather of 99% of American Herefords. He's a cow with a great bio, too. Sarah Guggenmeier writes that he's the sire whose powerful hindquarters changed the beef industry forever. Skip this sentence if you're a vegetarian. It's likely you've partaken of anxiety's bloodline. To set the scene, it was the Midwest after the Civil War, and everyone in the cattle industry was out to breed a cow that tasted better than any other. Lots of people tried to create a mixed breed that would have the best meat for the perfect steak. Two men, Charles Gudgell and Thomas Alexander Simpson, who ran the Gudgell-Simpson farm in Independence, Missouri, would stop at nothing to find this perfect steak bull. They traveled to England, saw Anxiety the Fourth's spectacular hindquarters, and bought him, though according to the story, the owner said Anxiety wasn't good enough for surrying, that is, making babies. Now a marker in the Golden Acres subdivision in Independence, an appropriately English-looking area, commemorates the cornerstone bull and his buyers. According to the cattle site, a reference and news source for the cattle industry, More than 5 million Herefords populate 50 countries, dominating ranches from the prairies to the pampas and from the Russian steppes to the South American veldt. If that's not cowboy poetry, I don't know what is. The first Anxiety was so named because his owner, a Mr. Carwardine, felt extremely anxious about his birth. Anxiety's mother was an expensive grand show heifer, and so fat that Carwardine wondered if either animal would survive. And I'll end it by saying this, believe it or not. We'll be right back. Would you like to have a look at the weird, wonderful, and obscure things around the Kansas City metro area? Well, let me tell you about a book that will give you a good place to start. This is Terry Runyon from the New Directions Podcast, here to tell you about Secret Kansas City, a guide to the weird, wonderful, and obscure. Ann Nickendorf wrote this book. She is a local area writer who does a lot of freelance work for the Kansas City Star, KCUR, and Flatland Magazine. She has come up with areas around both Kansas and Missouri that not a lot of people knew about. And this particular broadcast only covered some. If you'd like a list of a lot more, go by your local rally house and pick up a copy of Secret Kansas City. You will learn things about the Kansas City area that you never knew existed. Secret Kansas City by Ann Nickendorf. Kansas City's Believe It or Not. On the next edition of the New Directions Podcast, it will be our annual Veterans Day show. It's going to be all musical, as always. It will be a chance to lift up the veterans who gave their life to make sure our country stayed free. And we do pray that they will never, ever be forgotten. It will be, as I said, all musical. I'll throw some things in. We'll throw some extra special Veterans Day related music too. So the next edition, our Veterans Day show. Join me next time on the podcast. Kansas City has its own very bizarre backstories. Ann Nickendorf brought out quite a few. If you have not bought the book, I encourage you to do so. I think you're going to find some things very interesting. And those of you that live in the Johnson County area may find some things that you didn't even know you had. I learned that with the stories I especially shared on the Kansas side near Mission. Very interesting book. I wouldn't call it a sport, however. I would have thought you'd buy something like that at the local bookstore. But in any case, I got it at Rally House, and the rest was pretty much history. That's going to wind things up for this edition of the New Directions Podcast. Thank you for being with me as always. We will see you next time for the annual Veterans Day show. Until then, I discovered a new version of Elvira that I thought you might want to listen to as we get out of here. It's done by William Lee Golden and the Goldens, his three sons. And the bass singer that's on here is very young and very good. William Lee, you and your boys get us out of here, would you?